Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Ifrit Chi, and as usual, it is always wonderful to be able to communicate with you live and in living color. This is a special edition, of course, of New Day. We normally are here on Saturday evenings at this time, but as we indicated last Saturday, we would do a special edition tonight in order to make certain we were able to bring Dr. Randy Short back on for him to provide us with the kind of continuation as we examine what he calls black necks and what we call just straight-up traitors and sellouts. He's done quite a bit of research on this area of so-called black leadership who has, I mean, literally just, you know, been co-conspirators, for lack of a better terminology, with, you know, the enemy. The people who, I mean, outright blatantly had plans, made plans, implemented some of them for the destruction, the extermination, shall we say, of our people. You all, of course, are familiar with eugenics, and certainly in this day and age, you understand the impact and the dynamics connected to such programs and politics, shall we say. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why the Men and Women March really came into existence. And we're going to be telling you more about that very, very soon. Not only tell you more about it, but now kind of show you what the Men and Women March was about, is about, and certainly it's now universal movement. Before we go into tonight's program, we, of course, are very, very thankful, and this has nothing to do with this so-called Thanksgiving Day thing. We would not dare, you know, try to buy into that one. And for those who do, well, all I can do is say shame on you. At this stage of the game, I don't know what to say. But we are thankful every day, especially to be able to fight and to be able to now focus on how we're going to win. I mean, that's where we're at with this, win to a greater extent and win with a certain type of continuation and secured kind of position. So, again, before we go into all of that, we, again, give thanks and praises to our Creator and certainly for our freedom-fighting ancestors, as we often do say pretty much every week. Again, it has nothing to do with today, and we are particularly thankful because Marissa Alexander is home. Well, this happened yesterday, and very shortly we are going to talk a little about that. We're going to bring on a sister who is a part of a national coalition, because when this thing went down with Marissa Alexander, certainly sisters in particular felt the need to be, you know, a little more involved, or shall I say a lot more involved in her case, especially given the fact that there was so much energy and so much emphasis placed on the Trayvon Martin case, which of course there should have been. But here you had a sister who had not killed anyone, who was looking at facing 20 years. And it just kind of almost boggles the mind when you constantly see how our sisters are treated, related to, responded to when it comes to these matters in comparison to other, you know, similar types of matters. We saw the same thing with the Scott sisters, who had been given, what, 20 years. I mean, I don't remember how long. I know they served like maybe 11 or so. But the bottom line is for $16 or $11 or whatever it was, they were in jail for many years. We didn't see people do anything for a very, very long time. And then once it did get exposure, you know, we saw, you know, people jumping in from all over the place. But the bottom line is, when it comes to sisters, when it comes to black women, for whatever reason, there is a very interesting thing that happens, and we really need to examine that because there's definitely something wrong with that picture. At any rate, we are going to talk a little tonight about the situation with Marissa Alexander. We're going to again talk with one of the sisters who heads up is a part of a group in the D.C. area. We spoke earlier, of course, with folks in the Jacksonville, Florida area, and, we are just extremely happy that, Marissa Alexander is now at home. We are not happy with the fact, of course, that the conditions for her being at home is kind of interesting. She's under quite a bit of regulatory kinds of things, and we're going to talk more about that, too. In the meantime, we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and, again, we're going to talk with a sister who is a part of the Free Marissa Mobilization Committee. There's several, of course, including here in Philadelphia, the National Black Women's Defense League did some national types of coordinating around the issue, helped rallies, and definitely facilitated a lot of dialogue around this case. But again, there are several groups that did that, and we are going to talk with one of those groups tonight, in addition to give you more information about what the Black Women's Defense League has been doing and will be doing in the near future, and not just in terms of Marissa Alexander's case, but as pertains to Black women and girls nationwide, especially as we now move forward with the national rally for the elimination of violence and abuse African women and girls. So we're going to tell you more about that as we proceed. What we're going to do, though, is just take a quick break before we go to our live line again. And when we do come back, we should be ready to talk with Sister Samaya Fire. And, again, she's with the Free Marissa Now Mobilization Campaign as well as the African American Black Women's Cultural Alliance. We remind you again that also joining us tonight is going to be Dr. Randy Short. And we're going to talk with him after we talk with Sister Samaya. But in the meantime, we are going to, again, take a quick break, and we're also going to open up the chat room for you very, very shortly because we have a couple of questions we're going to put out there to you, including, of course, we'll tell you about that when we come back. But we want to give you a couple updates on, as you know, a few weeks back we were talking about this person in or from Memphis, Tennessee, who was doing a film, a documentary on the Million Woman March. And, again, we are encouraging people not to support that film. We're going to talk more about that probably on Saturday because someone had sent us a message that said, well, you know, by us putting it out there about that person, that we were, you know, really giving them free advertisement. And so we want to kind of elaborate and respond to that inquiry to a greater extent, and in addition to a few other inquiries that we got with people raising questions or asking questions about a few things. We want to kind of put some things very straight and give people some more insight into what they apparently do not know and need to know about the Million Woman March and its movement. But, again, we are in continual watch out for perpetrators and people who attempt to exploit us. And, of course, we are still encouraging people do not support the documentary that is out there. We're going to respond, again, this Saturday to the questions or the particular inquiry that was sent to us in regard to, why are we taking the time to even respond to this guy? It is obvious that he's infringing upon intellectual property, and we should just go ahead and deal with him legally. And just briefly, I will say, we will do that, but, you know, dealing with our people now has to be the way that we need to deal with our people. We need to deal with them legally or so-called legally, of course, and we definitely are going to do that. But we also need to deal with them based on our history and culture. And the one thing that I do know that we've kind of gotten away from in terms of holding people accountable is implementing and utilizing some of our own tactics that come from our traditions and our cultures. And so when we bring these issues to you, our family, who we call our family, we believe truly in the concept of there being power with the people. Okay, so even though that you know, so-called jurisprudence thing is you know, it has its place and it can be of some applicable kind of thing, but what we do foremost is get that information to our people, let that begin to circulate amongst our people. For those who might think we're giving this person PR, fine, you go on and think that, but I guarantee you, there is power amongst the people. And once it is put out there and it is in kind of grasp, folks know what to do and how to do it, be it consciously or subconsciously. So I'll go more into that when we elaborate on that issue. But again, this person, George Tillman, is a violator. He is a media I'll just say right now, he's a violator, period. And an exploiter, and a fraud. And I said it, and there it is. I mean, anytime you try to do, anytime you do a so-called documentary on something and you never even put forth an effort until you're caught to, you know, try to get some real information and some real facts from where it came from, then obviously you're never trying to really tell the truth or give any real insight, and that was evident when we first saw what it was he was doing. So we'll talk more about that on Saturday. For right now, again, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we should be ready to talk with Sister Samaya Fire. All right, and again, we're going to open up the chat room and allow you all to exchange, and we have quite a few other announcements and things that we're going to be bringing to you as well. So in the meantime, you stay right there, and we'll be right back. Again, Marissa Alexander is home. It's kind of chilly here in Philly and other parts of the East Coast, but it's all right because we're coming in from under the cold and getting ready for some real victories. Coming in from out of the cold, and we're not talking about just in terms of the temperature outside where you might be, and of course some of you are on the West Coast side, so you're not really feeling that chill, but we're talking about coming in from out of the cold in terms of what has happened to us as a people. But we'll go a little more into that very, very shortly, and again, we're going to open up that chat room for you, but right now, we're going to go to our live line. And as indicated, we're going to talk to his sister, Samaya Fire. We're going to talk with her just briefly tonight, but again, we are ecstatic about the fact that Sister Marissa Alexander is at home with her family. You know, we don't do the things, well, we call it misgivings, by the way. And so, you know, again, we are thankful every day, and certainly, you know, this gives us the focal point of, you know, just showing how consistency can, in fact, make a difference. Sister Marissa Alexander is home, and as we continue to now get her free, that's what it's really about now. But we also want to remind all of you that there are thousands of African women, of black women, who are incarcerated in the U.S. Many of them are first-time offenders. Many of them are there dealing with offenses that, you know, white people get off scot-free all the time. I mean, let's look at Zimmerman, for example, although we're not even talking about sisters who have done anything close to that. But again, we're going to be telling you more about that within this next year as we now move forward with the national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of women and girls of African descent. We'll tell you more about that project. But right now, we're going to go to our live line, and we are going to talk with our sister, Sister Samaya Fire, who is going to give us a brief report and a little insight into what's getting ready to now happen and how you all can certainly get involved and should. You know, again, we see that there's an imbalance going on when it comes to our sisters in comparison to other situations, and this really has to stop, and I can assure you if I have anything to do with it, it will be stopping very, very soon. So what we're going to do now is go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Sister Samaya Fire. And again, she is a part of several of the various groups that are around the U.S. nationwide, was committed and is committed to addressing this issue of getting Marissa Alexander freed. I mean, totally freed. Right now, she's kind of what they call under house arrest. Well, you know, and you know, at least she's not in incarcerated. She's not in those dungeons or in one of those dungeons. But still, this sister needs to be totally freed. And that is, again, what we are talking about, you know, making certain that that happens. So let's go to our live line, and we're going to talk to Sister Samaya Fire and get that update. Sister, do we have you on our line here?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I certainly can. All right. Great. Well, it's a new day, resurrection and liberation, and thank you for taking the time to join us this evening. And I made sure that our family know that we will have you back very, very shortly because we're going to continue to not only build and work towards the situation with Marissa Alexander, but certainly as women of African descent, you know, we have a lot of other work to do, and we're going to be building towards that as well.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Sister Empress, for having us on your show with Million Woman March, and for all the support of everyone who has helped to bring Marissa home on this day to be with her family and to be nurtured by her children and her family before the trial starts. The trial will begin, as of now, it will begin on March the 31st of 2014. Okay. And so right now she is out on a bond and will be able to prepare along with her legal team for the trial at that time. So, again, I am with the Free Marissa Now campaign, and you can find us on Facebook at Free Marissa Now, and you can also find us on Tumblr at Free Marissa Now. .tumblr.com, and you can also contact us at freemarissanow@gmail.com and also on Twitter at freemarissanow. So all of those ways people can contact us and keep up with us in terms of what's happening with the trial, and also to sign up with us and join with us to help do different support actions, different direct actions that will help with her case and to keep the her name and her situation in the media and in the community. So we're really, really thankful for everybody's support up until this point.
All right, Masuzu. Thank you again for taking the time to join us. And also, before you go, very briefly, let folks know that when you come back, you're going to tell us about the other group that you work with, the African American Black Women's Cultural Alliance. We want people to know that you represent that group and that you will be coming back to talk more about that as well. But just give us, just briefly, let us know a little bit
about
that.
Sure. Absolutely. The African American Black Women's Cultural Alliance, I am the lead organizer for that group, and we're about, it's an alliance of about 200 women, and they are across about 24 states, and they work on various issues that have to do with black women and well-being over violence, economic empowerment, and education. So those women are all in different states working on those particular issues, joining forces and joining our work together to raise issues that pertain to black women's health and well-being.
All right. And again, you are based in this organization and you are based in the D.C. area, that's correct?
That is correct. I sure am. And so if folks want to contact me, they can contact me at AABW, Cultural Alliance, all one word, at gmail.com.
Wonderful. And as I indicated to you, sister, we're going to connect you with one of our brothers who's a part of our MWM Brotherhood, and that's Dr. Randy Short, who actually will be coming on very soon. But again, we want to kind of connect the two of you because we're both working on these some of these issues. And as I indicated, and he'll be coming on again a little later on, he's done some tremendous research as it pertains to eugenics, and particularly, you know, black folks, so-called leaders who, if not literally partnered with these people, but certainly also played some other kind of roles then, and then some of the things that have transformed today that some of these groups, organizations, and individuals, you know, it's not by chance that we have made the kind of progress that we needed to make as a people. Well, Dr. Randy Short has provided us with research and information that shows really why and how some of this has happened. So, again, I'm going to make sure that you two are connected, and as we move forward, we're able to do so all across the board for success and victory.
That would be great. And also, too, wanting to encourage your listening audience to contact us for future direct actions with the Free Marissa Now campaign, too. We're kicking our campaign into phase two, and during phase two, we will be looking at how mandatory minimum sentencing and stand your ground sentencing impacts victims of domestic violence. Also looking at the politics of violence against black women. And so there will be lots of different things that our communities can do to join forces in their individual states and in their neighborhoods and in their communities to increase awareness about the case and to also take specific actions, as we will place those actions, the request for those actions, on our Facebook and on our Tumblr and on our website. So that's just a little bit about how folks will be able to join us in our actions to ensure that Marissa is exonerated, vindicated, and restored to our to her community and family.
All right, Cecile. Again, I thank you for taking the time to join us this evening. And as we continue to get ready for the actual trial for March, we will have more dialogues. And again, we want to remind everyone that as the Million Women Movement moves forward and the Black Women's Defense League, this is what we're doing, connecting with other sisters, other groups of our people, because the Million Women March, of course, is the largest gathering in the world. We can more than, you know, realistically represent in every way possible. And that is our mission now. So, again, we want to thank our sister for joining us. And we are, you know, about to show the world that sisterhood solidarity is real. We can do it. We are going to do it. And with that, we're going to demonstrate, you know, the type of victories that we need to now have. So, Sister Samaya, again, thank you for taking the time to join us, and we look forward to having you back very soon.
Thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, family, we are going to take another quick break. Before we do, we want to send a quick shout-out to a couple of people, including I think we have online with us today our sister Dorothy. We're going to bring her in very shortly, and I think we also have Sister Amy. We're going to bring them in as well. But what I'm going to do is take a quick break, and I want to also let you all know that before we bring Dr. Randy Short on, our brother is under attack, okay? And so these things are not new, as all of you know, that when you become a person of us, you already know what happened, okay? Meaning we're going to be under attack. It's just you've never seen where it didn't happen. When you stand up for people, oh, somebody's going to come after you. And so, unfortunately, that has now happened to our brother. I mean, it's not surprising, but here it is. And so we want to make you all aware of that. So as we talk tonight for about Black Necks and for you know, the issues that are surrounded around that, we want to also make you aware that, needless to say, other people, meaning white folks, are definitely out there hunting, looking for us, those of us who stand up. And now our brother Randy Short, Dr. Randy Short, is one of those folks. He's going to tell you more about that, too. But again, we're going to also talk more about his research tonight with part three of, you know, exposing Black Necks. And we talk about Black Necks as being folk who, you know, sell us out. I mean, very simply, either the individuals, the organizations, and so forth and so on. We've got to call the stuff the way it is. This is not about being politically correct or incorrect. It's about being what we need to be, which is on point and able to observe and deal with these things appropriately. So, again, we're going to tell you more about that and a few other things as well. I'm going to open up the chat room in about 5 minutes or so, and at that point I'll be putting some information in there as well for you. But, again, we're just going to take a quick break, get ready to get set up for our next segment, and when we come right back, we are going to hear from Dr. Randy Short. Hang in there. Unity And I certainly talk about sisterhood solidarity. And, you know, there are many other terminologies that we utilize to talk about the necessity of what we must do. But, you know, the question oftentimes is how to do that. And so, you know, the Million Women Movement has come up with quite a few ideas, concepts, and I dare say strategies to make some of that happen. And so between now and the next couple of months, we're going to tell you more about that. I'm preparing for a national tour. And with that, you know, I'm expecting Dr. Randy Short and a few other folks that you've met here or heard of here on our radio program. They're going to be traveling with us as well, because we have information and a message that has to be heard, and we're going to be about making certain that it is. Before we bring our brother in, I'm going to share with you something that was sent to me just a little while ago, but I think it's important that you know what's going on. So check this out.
Andy Short from the Black Autonomy Network community joining us from Washington. Mr. Short, welcome to the program. I'm certain you have a lot to say. Let's jump right in and just tell us, though, what do you think about the not guilty verdict issued for George Zimmerman?
It's completely unsurprising to me. I expected it, actually.
Well,
it's not unusual for whites to get away with doing crimes to blacks. I'll give an example. In the history of the United States, as multicolored as African Americans are, not one white man in the history of this country has ever been accused and successfully convicted of raping a black woman. I mean, in 400 or 500 years, it never happened once. That's the kind of fantasy world in which the racist, supremacist culture dwells on. This is completely unsurprising. I'm not surprised at all. The town in which Trayvon Martin, Sanford, is named for white supremacists who helped do genocide in Congo that resulted in the death of 15 million black people in Africa. That's something that they're not saying in the news. It's unsurprising. Florida has a very violent history. The United States has a history in which black people's human rights are not respected. It's the norm. And having a black president who has no connection to African Americans because he's not one doesn't make a difference. And our attorney general, who is black but Barbadian, is not an African American, doesn't have a connection. So we're people without representation, without protection, and we're at risk.
Mr. Short, the head of the prosecution, the head attorney of the Martin family, in the post-trial press conference, stated that there are certainly racial undertones to this crime that must be acknowledged. So you're basically saying that those racial undertones have pretty much everything to do with the final verdict.
Undertones? I mean, is he ridiculous? I mean, they treated the victim of a murder that was premeditated as if he was the perpetrator of the crime. That this is a kind of racism and white supremacy is a mental illness. And that's how you can get the prosecutor to call this undertones. You have an all-white jury. That's supposed to be illegal. And you're supposed to have a jury of your peers. Well, were there any peers on that jury that remind you or remotely look like Trayvon Martin? This was a sham from the beginning. Zimmerman is of Jewish descent. And the same way in New York, where you had the Central Park jogger, who was a Jewish woman, who was killed, or not killed, beaten by a Latino man, they rounded up a whole bunch of black men and put them in jail for years. And then it came out they were innocent. But certain ethnic groups in America have more power than others. Blacks are not organized. They're not united. Until they get to that point of standing together, these things will continue to happen. And our leadership should not be based on someone in the White House who's just a front man for white supremacy and imperialism. We need to have our own leadership. We need to stand together. This is completely predictable. And these kinds of trials, justifiable homicide is the term that you white folks, white men, folks have been killing people in our community for hundreds of years with impunity. This is old. This is boring. We really need to take this to the international world court and began to really show the judicial corruption across this country. I mean, nothing is amazing. None of this is new to me. I've expected this. There's a gentleman by the name of Attorney Alton Maddox, who I wish you would interview. He's been saying that Zimmerman was going to walk for about 7 months, and it's gone just like he said. Even before the jury was picked, Alton Maddox told us, he's a gentleman that was defending Tawana Brawley, a woman who was raped, who has to pay $400,000 to her white male rapist. That's American justice for you. So he would know. This is completely, to people who are African-American and conscious of our history and understand that it's a price for not being united and standing together, could have expected this. This is completely, I'm completely unsurprised. I'm angry, but not surprised.
All right, thank you very much. It's Randy Short to speaking to us from Washington. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us here on Press TV.
Okay, now, I just got that a little while ago, and I just felt compelled to share that with you because this apparently, this interview that was done with Press TV, is apparently one of the reasons why our brother is under attack, because he apparently mentioned something about what Jewish, you know, people have done, you know, in the case of the Central Park Five and so forth. Well, now he's being called an anti-Semitic person, anti-Semite. Again, it's important that you all are aware of this because this is kind of what these people do, meaning anyone that speaks up and for our people, and clearly that's what was said in that interview. There was a clear, you could not imagine anything other than what was said. But again, when our people stand up, you can rest assured we're going to be attacked. And at this stage of the game, we need to be very clear about that and really prepare ourselves to fight back. That's what we're talking about. Now, before we go to our live line and talk with Dr. Randy Short, I want to remind you there were three things that were kind of said here that we've been talking about here at our program and for the Men and Women Movement for the past, well, the program for the past 6 years and for the movement the past 16 years, and that is taking our situation into international court. That is what we've been preparing to do. So it's my pleasure to announce to all of you on this day of recognizable genocide, or at least the day that they kind of recognized the fact that it was genocide, next year, December 1st through the 7th, the Men and Women Movement will hold the first summit, its first summit in dealing with violations of natural and human rights. We're going to tell you more about that, certainly, but we want to get everyone really prepared. We're going to make the official announcement in a couple of days because December 10th, I think it is in fact International Human Rights Day. Well, we make the announcement, and that will be for next year, though, that we will hold our first summit for North America because, again, what Dr. Randy Short mentioned and what I've been talking about for a while is we now have to go into international circles. We now have to go into other formats to deal with this issue, and we are preparing to do that and have been preparing to do that. So we're going to tell you more about that. This is going to be truly a historic kind of thing. It will lay the groundwork for us to begin to demand remedies. And when I say remedies, I'm talking about land, just to give you a general idea, because the Men and Women Movement was all about, the Men and Women March and now its movement, was all about self-determination. That was a fundamental principle, application, and so forth. And that's why you can always tell who, in fact, or what, in fact, is not about the Men and Women March in this movement, it, even though they say they were a part of it at some point or representing some of it. And I'll give you more insight to what I'm talking about in regards to that, too, because we just had to shut another thing down other than the George Tillman thing a few weeks ago. We now have another group that jumped out there, a white group, because it's usually white people and Negroes that try this stuff. And we sit back and let them do it just to see who it is and what they're trying to do before we then shut them down. We always do. But nevertheless, we're going to go to our live line. We're going to talk with our brother and get some further insight into what has happened in terms of him now being on, I wanted to say the blacklist. I like that, though. You know, it's kind of good to be on the blacklist. But, you know, again, it isn't so good when you understand the nature of how these people work. Once they start labeling us, once they start saying that we are anti this or whatever, that's usually a sign of two things. One, that you're doing the right thing or a good thing for our people, and two, that they're getting ready to try to set you up or set us up in some kind of way. So we have to be very, very careful and very cognizant of how this game is played. We've seen it enough. We've heard it enough to know by now what it is that we have to do to respond back. And certainly you all understand the power amongst us as a people in putting out information, and a lot of times that information is you know, what is helpful in covering our backs and certainly in helping to bring greater protection to our people. We did that. The Men Women March did that in 1997 when, in fact, Sister Winnie Mandela came. At that time, she was under attack. She was attempting to or preparing to run for president, which most people don't know. We did. I knew it. And this is one of the reasons why it was so important to make sure that she joined us, because she was going to run for president, the white folks did not want that to happen because she would have won the popular vote. So they had to create a situation to make it seem as if she, you know, had done something criminal or something unethical or whatever. And so all these stories started floating around. The stipulations for her coming to the U.S. was the year prior to coming to the Men Women March, she could only come to the U.S. if, in fact, she didn't speak publicly. And that was seen in 1996 when she did come to New York, stood next to Minister Farrakhan and did not say one word, because that was a part of the stipulations of her coming to the U.S. Well, I was outraged and was at that point already in the almost in a year of planning the Men Women March, and then made the decision that she was going to come and join her sisters worldwide on October 25th. And, well, you all know the rest is history, because she did come and she did speak. She did not win the bid for the election, but she did go back to South Africa and was not prosecuted. My point being, the power of the people can work. We must make certain that we be very watchful with what is going on right now with our brother, and as a result, be very prepared to fight back. So without further ado, we're going to go to our live line, and I'm going to have Dr. Randy Short to tell you about what has happened. We're not going to go all the way into that tonight. We're going to wait and do that at another time next week so that we can kind of just get a gist of what's going on now to get prepared for that upcoming dialogue, and so that you all are kind of ready for any kind of responses that we may need to make. But we're going to, you know, go into that briefly tonight. We're going to open up the chat room in a few moments. And we're going to talk shortly after we hear, kind of get an overview of what is going on with the attack on Dr. Randy Short, to the some of the research, I mean incredible research, that he's uncovered. And we'll be preparing, hopefully, to put into a book in the very near future. So let's do this. Let's go to our live line. And, again, we are opening up our mic for our brother, Dr. Randy Short. Brother Randy, do we have you?
Yes, you do. How is everyone? Ashe. And amen and all of that. May I have exactly 60 seconds to pick on my favorite?
You can have as much time as you like.
I'm just going to go in and say to everybody, isn't it ironic that today, when they pardon the turkey, even the turkey that Obama pardoned was white, and yet we've got all those black men on solitary confinement that haven't been pardoned. Hundreds of thousands of black folks who should be released from jail as this man is working to give citizenship and everything else to foreigners. He's taken up every issue, every kind of issue that there could be imagined. And, you know, I just, when I think about him, so many things cross my mind, from the fact that how are you going to be a model to young black men when he wears tight pants? He almost has skinny jeans on. He needs to take those tight pants off. And his wife, she's getting on my nerves too. With Marissa Alexander, she could have said something. She could have said something for Maggie Rhodes, whose baby's penis got cut off back in August that we're dealing with, or what's happening to Miss Dunning's grandchildren being stolen from her. I'm getting to the point where she reminds me of Count Chocula on some of that overstock food over in the center. You know, the little sugary and salty stuff they give us to kill us when we need some food. She looked at an old bag of Count Chocula sitting up somewhere, not standing up. I had to get that out. One last thing, and I'm done. Thanksgiving, y'all need to call this Resistance Day. And all I can tell you is you don't have to do much, but do something. Haven't gotten that out. Just, can you say this with me? Obama, take the tight pants off, okay? We don't want to know whether your relationship with Michelle is bootleg. You show our bootleg in your policy towards the people that you, when you need votes, you associate with us. But you know what? In 2 years, we'll be done with him. Oh, thank you, Jesus. All right. That's out. Now, let me quickly say what happened on Press TV. A lot of folks, anybody that's not aware, the Trayvon Martin story was suppressed by the mainstream media for several weeks. Having worked in media and understanding international human rights and public relations, Press TV, through a relationship I have with some of the people there, they picked up the Trayvon Martin story and forced it internationally. The United States is angry with Iran. What the Iranians do, and this is why the international thrust that you're talking about, taking our issue, is very important to black folks, because a lot of us think wrongly. In fact, Jews have taught us wrongly for their own purposes that somehow black people got all their rights in the 60s because they just stood up to the police and the dogs, when 50 years later they're shooting and killing and beating us and we have fewer rights than we did then. Somebody's lying, right? Well, it has a lox and a bagel hanging off of it. Anyway, the Iranians, who are struggling for their self-determination, find the discussion of the American racial situation key as a leverage point to counter the Zionists and the other people. So Trayvon Martin became a key issue. And this is exactly what happened in the 60s. My being a student of African-American history, I know that the Europeans and other people who are angry about Birmingham 50 years ago forced Kennedy and the other people to take the civil rights movement more seriously. It isn't about us, it's about the world. And we're citizens of the world. To make a long story short, I called someone 3 in the morning. I called Sister Marzia Heshemi. And Marzia Heshemi put a spin. They were running a story on Trayvon Martin every hour in the hour for 24 hours, a full week before it hit the American media. The people won't tell you. In fact, I need to watch Press TV. Press TV, PRESSTV.IR, because they have a lot of independent black and African voices talking about this Zionist Anglo-American Nazi BS that we go through. I happen to be one of the people that comes on fairly regularly that can break down the news. And in fact, I must be doing real well, because when they were in this period of negotiation over nukes and nuclear energy, I got pulled. They wouldn't even post my stuff up there, because apparently Obama and the NSA and the other people can't stand folks like me who really don't give a damn about how they feel. They're killing our people here, and we're sick of it. So back in the summer, as I had told people that Zimmerman was Jewish and the judges and all these other people are corrupt, when I put that out there, the Anti-Defamation League, led by that crook called Abe Foxman, he's a crook, he's a pimp, he's a charlatan, he's a liar, he's a Holocaust hustler, and he's a thug, and he's a shakedown artist for world Zionism to make everybody feel guilty for stuff that white people did that they're friends to. Why are you asking blacks and Palestinians to pay for something that was white-on-white crime? Seems like white people, they did it, they should pay for it, leave us out of it. Anyway, after several of us did our interviews, they issued a paper back in July, and that's when they started trying to pull them off the satellites. And let's go further. Back in January, I'm sorry, Super Bowl Sunday, when Press TV ran the story that the FBI had picked up Malcolm X's grandson, they went nuts. So what it says is that internationally, when we speak to the larger world and we educate them to these devils here, it's a threat to them. And I'm so glad whether I'm unemployed, underemployed, living with mom, don't got a car, that if I'm making these people lose some sleep, shoot, I hope they die from sleep exhaustion or lack of sleep and leave us the hell alone. We want our freedom. You know what I'm saying? So they put me down as an anti-Semite, and all I did was identify that Zimmerman is part Jewish. It's obvious. And anybody out here that has a question in their mind, if you've ever heard about that idiot, that guy at Harvard named Dr. Alan Dershowitz at Harvard Law School, who is a racist, rabid Zionist, why was he threatening the judge in the Trayvon Martin case demanding that he be acquitted long time before the trial even happened? Why would a rabid Zionist get involved with a Latino? They don't care unless it's one of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So Abe Foxman and the others who've watched me, because I talk about them all the time, but very intelligently, they have a very hard time nailing me because I don't say, oh, I don't make stereotypes. I'm not interested. By the way, I'm part Jewish. I'm not scared of them. If I'm anti-anything, I'm anti-white Zionist. I'm happy with what I am. I love me. Okay. So that's where it stands. I just happen to be looking to find the pieces, the different interview pieces that have been put back on the web now that they've got some relation between the U.S. and Iran. And there were all these reports about how I'm an anti-Semite. I wasn't surprised, but it's like nobody's told me. So y'all need to understand that we got to fight. And if you listen to that cut, I barely talked about Jewish people. I talked about white people and white supremacy, which shows that these people align themselves with white supremacy and use being Jewish as a way to attack us. And when you say something back, you're an anti-Semite, which means if you don't want to be an anti-Semite, then you can't speak up for Mother Africa. You can't speak up for your black woman, for your black community, for your African people. You can't speak up for whether we're Moors or whatever we want to call ourselves. All of a sudden, we don't have a voice. White-on-white crime called the Holocaust. You know how white folks say it's black-on-black crime, they're not involved? Well, that's the way I'm beginning to feel about it.
Now, just so our family is clear when we say they and so forth, what group specifically has now called you anti-Semitic?
The NAACP, okay, was created in 1909 by Bernard Baruch as a trial balloon for the group that came out, and this is their 100th year, and in 1913, which is called the Anti-Defamation League, which is essentially a Jewish organization that covers Jewish criminality. So you can't say anything about, they'll come after you and call you anti-Semite. So if you see a Jewish man raping a woman, you say he's a rapist, they'll tell you you're anti-Semitic instead of him being a rapist. Wouldn't anti-Semitism be me making a biological or stereotypical reference to who the person is versus identifying what he did? In this instance, I identified a Jewish person that committed a murder. That's not an aspersion on the group. Do you get my point? So the Anti-Defamation League is essentially a group that has spied on and persecuted black people. In fact, I ran in, I had a neighbor that lived across the street from us. She was with the ADL, and they were spying on all the black organizations, sending stuff to Israel, spying on all the black leaders in Washington, D.C., and this is true across the country, that the ADL is almost like the Zionist Gestapo in America, and blacks are at the top of the list of the people that they feel they need to hold down. Anti-Defamation League. Nobody's defamed them. They're the ones defaming everyone else. Who's got the media and the papers? Please don't tell me a Fred Sanford and Lamont have the papers and all that. We don't have anything to defame anyone with. Even when our young folks go cussing and swearing and saying misogynistic stuff, who owns the record labels? Who gets them on the radio? Who gets them on video and cable? Not us.
Yep. Wow. And certainly, of course, my position in these videos with women and girls, you know, doing what they're doing in the videos.
And they're making all the boys homosexuals. All the boys have to be gay now. Now, you got a little nipple with some grease on it. Oh, look, I got the shiniest nipple. Oh, my nipple was showing on Kanye West. They're pushing that, too. Every kind of crazy thing, marijuana legalization, same-sex marriage, anything that would break down our people, break down us, make us weak, so we'll be phased out like the Hawaiians and the Indians. And all I have to say for all the ignorant people out there, I want folks to grow up, because if you've gone to church, preachers have lied to you and told you that there's some Judeo-Christian religion. There is not. There's Judaism and there's Christianity. The same way there's no Christian Muslim, there's no Christian Jew, there's no Muslim Jew, and there's no Jewish Muslim. These folks have a religion that justifies them. If you read the Mishnah, the Kabbalah, or the Talmud, just go and Google it and ask, say Talmud, T-A-L-M-U-D, and put in and caps, A-N-D, Christianity, or Christ, or Mary, or blacks, and you'll find out that 90% of these Negroes that run the church have been lied to. In fact, the best thing they can do, if you want to understand why the ADL and these other people are so crooked, since everyone says Jesus is God, Jesus called people who followed the oral traditions that got written down and became the Talmud, children of the devil. If Jesus is perfect, if Jesus is God himself, I didn't call them devils. Jesus did.
All right. All right, family, we want to remind everyone that the chat room is open. And what we want to do is we're going to go back to Dr. Randy Short in a minute, but we want to also just kind of do a sidestep for a moment and remind all of you that one of the things that we want to do starting next week is to send cards and best wishes, notes, and so forth to Marissa Alexander. And next week we're going to make sure that you have information on how to do that. Be it directly to her or to us, or I would prefer not to the lawyer, but even though, you know, she is the lawyer, but still, we want to send, you know, other stuff directly. Oh, no, I'm not asking anyone to send me money. We're just talking about best wishes.
Find another way, because she's going to take that out.
Well, she doesn't need that.
Yeah, we basically want the best wishes kind of thing going on. But at any rate, we're going to give folks more information about that. And I'm going to tell you really why I'm saying, you know, I'm not dealing with the lawyer, because the lawyer got scared of us. I don't know if everybody realized that. We were supposed to have one of the lawyers on a few weeks back. And she kind of heard, you know, how we were talking and what we were talking about. So I think she got a little scared because she would not return any calls after that. So, but anyway, you know, she's doing what she needs to do.
She sweated out her sheets, girl.
Well, you know, the reality of it is really very rare that I even have a non-melanated person on our program. But because it was a situation where we needed that update on Marissa Alexander, you know, I said, okay, we need to go ahead and do that. So technically, I mean, it worked out fine for me, to be honest with you, but we'll talk about that a whole other time. Again, we want to remind everyone that the chat room is open. Please feel free to go there if you have something you want to share with us, you have a comment or whatever. You most certainly are welcome to do so. And
before we get to Dr. Randy Short's report, or should I say providing us with part three of and some insight into some of the research that he has been doing regarding what he and I and others are now calling black necks. And again, you know, if you don't want to use that word, it's okay. As long as we understand we're talking about people who sell us out, that supposedly look like us and talk about they're for us and that kind of stuff. That's who we're talking about, yes. We're talking about them because, you know, this stuff has to be dealt with. But before we do that, we're going to open up the line because some of you have been holding for a while, and certainly after you have heard what has happened to our brother, I know you have some responses for that, so I want to give you all the opportunity to do that before we go into hearing some of the latest information that Brother Randy has uncovered for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to, I'm so familiar with this number now, 6100. I know who that is, and we're going to bid our welcome and greetings of Ma'ahutat to Sister Dorothy. Hey, Sister Dorothy, how are you this evening? Okay. I think our mic was on, but I was hoping her mic was on. Maybe it isn't. Okay, Sister Dorothy, do we have you on this line? Uh-uh, we're not getting her. So hopefully it's something going on with her phone and not with ours. So let's do this, and we'll bring her back shortly. Let's try. I think this is Sister Amy at 7940. Let's see if we can bring Sister Amy in. Sister Amy, do we have you on this line?
Yes, you do, Sister.
Greetings. All right. Greetings to you.
Yes, and I also believe Sister Gloria is on the line as well. We want to continue to make sure that we come together and unite and take this days and different things. If we are serious about our people, by any means, that is not threatening to our people, the wealth and the health and the welfare of us, we need to continue to keep staying on the agendas and not say, oh, I'm going to be celebrating these different holidays. Because if you go into the truth about these holidays are not our holidays. And if something, we have to condition our mind, even the Black Fridays and these different things, if we condition our minds and focus on, is this a agenda for our enemy or is this the beneficial to our people, then we will start being able to weigh things out and to not just do things like a bunch of sheep or cattle, but people that was placed on this planet as original people to know that we are the heirs of the earth because we was here first, not saying that I won't say better, but we hold our own category of life, and until we learn these things, then we are going to be no different than just followers instead of people that know their place on this planet. And another thing I will say is we need to continue to support one fight. If they pick on one, they have picked on us all. We got to continue to utilize unity and not have no excuses why we don't do certain things, but things that we must do because it's necessary. Because if they continue to see that we are la-la land caught up into thinking one made it. In other words, I heard from Minister Farrakhan, he made a statement one time. He said, if it's 3% of us make it or become millionaires, and the other 97% is not made it, then we have not even gotten nowhere. So we got to start not letting them think that, okay, oh, we made it as basketball players. We made it as the first person, a black person, went to the moon. Who are you going to the moon for? Is it for you to benefit our people, to help us, or it's benefiting somebody? So I'm saying this to say that we have to carefully re-examine the trickology that's been placed on us, because they always want us to, they'll put us in the commercials, but at the end of the day, they think on news or wherever to make it look like that we are a part of something, they accepted us. But actions speak louder than words, and if it doesn't match up to what actually we're supposed to be known as, these things supposed to be said and known of, then are we fooling ourselves? Are we allowing ourselves to be fooled, or can we continue to blame these things on them because this so-called thing of offering us some opportunity? We can use that opportunity and take it to our people, and not just think that when we have something, we made it, and then we get in trouble. We want to get our people, let's start a march, let's do this, let's do that. Well, we should be doing these things when we are not strike at. Like right now, we have to be able to find ways to see how we can support the Brother Randy, the sister, support the Sister Empress, support these great people who just don't care about letting our open enemy know what it is that they see, what we up against with their foolishness, and to internationally help support our brothers and sisters. And as my sister said before, no one can afford her. She's on her own destinies, and a destiny appointed from the Creator. So when you do something, you're not buying and giving and negotiating and bargaining with her to change nothing to satisfy you because you financially supported her. You're not financially supporting her. You're financially supporting yourself by helping with the great work. So a lot of people get that mixed up, and when we get with these other leaders, when they buy us off, we look at it as that's a form that when they do it, that's a form of control. But when we support each other, we should never look at it as we have no say so. If this sister and a brother never let you say anything, that's not what it should be about. These are great people, sisters and brothers that's coming forth to look at the interests of our future and survival as the original people. Thank you for allowing me to share.
All right, my sister. Well, thank you. And, wow, what can I say? I mean, you're right on point, and, you know, we certainly appreciate your comments and your thoughts. And, hey, we're going to move forward, needless to say. So thank you, Sister Amy. Okay, family, we're going to go to one more, and then we're going to go back to Dr. Randy Short. Caller, you are at 4381. Do you have a comment or question for us or something else you'd like to share with us tonight?
Yes, sure, my sister. I'm really a little bit saddened that the attorney was a little bit frightened off. But that happens, because the question that I had, and maybe Dr. Short knows about it already, is I just want to know the name of the person who actually did the procedure on little baby Ashton, because that has really just bothered my soul, my very soul. And if, in fact, we can't just tell the truth without it be having any unnecessary sugarcoating it of the mess, let me tell you, it's shame on us. I don't care about these people and their systems. That was so wrong and ugly. And what I learned from Sister Dorothy today is that finally, I guess, Memphis woke up and gave some type of rally for this young woman to kind of bring that to the forefront. And that should have happened 2 days after they discovered this kind of thing. And it took you guys to get on there and talk about it to get them to do something. I guess they got shamed last week while we were talking.
I know,
and then
right.
Here you are on again today. And they use people, and not just the system, but our people use people like you, Dr. Sharp, myself, anybody that will stand up to get things out there, but then they back up because they've used you to get what they wanted to get to that point. So question is, and that's my little commentary on that, what is the actual name of the person who did the procedure? Was it a physician assistant, a surgeon, a doctor, a nurse. Who does anybody know the name of that person? Because that's the kind of thing that we have to get out. Who actually did that?
Okay.
We have the clinic.
Well, let me just say this. Give me 1 minute, please, my brother. I just want to say that, remember, Saturday, this coming Saturday, we will have the sister on, okay? Sister Maggie will be on as well as the attorney. So, you know, we'll be able to get, you know, really a lot of insight and specific kinds of things on Saturday. Okay, I just wanted to remind you of that. But go ahead, Brother Andy.
You've got two issues. I know you said you don't care about the system, but are you calling from Philly or are you calling from Tennessee? Where are you calling from?
This is Hattie in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hattie, have you ever lived in Tennessee?
Never.
Okay, I have. And I have never had an experience other than in Boston with the level of apathy and black self-hatred, fear, backstabbing on a level that you just don't know. What that attorney has been able to do, in fact, you need to remember something. She waited until October to get an attorney, okay? That, I just want you to get that. I would have had an attorney when I saw the penis missing. The penis is missing, and it's months go by before an attorney is consulted. So I know that you want to just jump on this, but and I'm not victimizing anyone. I'm only saying that the mother and that network, so there's September, all of September goes through, a significant part of October goes by, and then someone gets an attorney. So I know we get really fired up. Yes, we fired up. We're angry. But I want you to tell me that you would wait a month and a half before you got an attorney if someone cut your child's penis or clitoris off.
Oh, absolutely not. Like I said, the rally will be going in 2 days. The lawyer will be right away as soon as I left the hospital.
That's you living in
Minneapolis. I guess that's sad because they're worse than in Minnesota, I guess.
In Memphis, they have a statue to Nathan Bedford Forrest, the Ku Klux Klanman that helped to kill at least a good 1,000 black people in the state of Tennessee, has a monument in an area where blacks don't live too far from. And black folks, effort to get rid of it, and black folks didn't back up the person that was pushing to get rid of the statue.
I remember that when they were trying to get rid of that. I remember that.
So when if you've lived down in Tennessee, I'm so happy, by the way, that she's from Mississippi, because were she from Tennessee, we may have never even heard about it. I can only tell you, I've experienced personal losses of my library and my possessions to educate black folks dealing with black folks in Tennessee. So I've lost at least $100,000 of priceless things because I wanted to go in and lift up my people and folks didn't want it. So when certain communities of black people in this country, they're begging for the abuse that white folks are going to give them. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not racing into a conflict where I don't see courage and I don't see a will to resist, because those people will cash your chips in and go and kiss white folks who have on Klan robes and say, well, they have a right to their opinion. So having said that, there's a doctor's name, but then again, there's such an elaborate process down there to file that the attorney tried to explain. And
I heard
that. To be careful so he can get to that point. But black people down there in Memphis, a city that's 70% black, and their congressman is Jewish, who ain't done nothing for them, that's how it is. I want things to be very different for us. But you know what? We're at one place, and our people are somewhere else, and it's heartbreaking. Sister Empress should have millions of dollars to work with to uplift girls and ladies. But who's backing her? Who's backing you with Miss Dunning? So we've got a real issue that some of our people are only going to understand when they have their Katrina experience in their lives and in their communities, because they don't see, if it doesn't hurt me, if it doesn't screw me, if Bull Connor isn't humping on my two-year-old or messing with my man or beating my mama, it's not that important.
Well, and let me also add, we got God.
Most people want to know him if he's not white. If you like black people, they don't want him. I need a God that wants to string me up.
when we're following
this guy, Borgia's homosexual boyfriend is our image of our savior. I mean, we picked a white sissy with long Lady L'Oreal hair to be our savior. That's crazy, especially after folks know the Palestinians. I mean, they look like folk in the hood. So where'd this white sissy with the long hair come from? And you can go to churches full of educated Negroes, and if you don't have that white sissy with the long blonde hair, they won't walk in your church. And Muslims ain't much better.
Well, as you all know, one of the things we don't talk about that much here is on our program is religion. So let us move forward. One thing I do want to say, though, is Memphis, Tennessee, that is also where George Tillman is from, who attempted to exploit and tell misinformation or give misdirection about the May Woman March. Hence, the type of Negro mentality, the type of stab you in the back, the type of I will do anything to get what I want for myself and later for everybody else, that was exemplified with this so-called documentary that this guy attempted to push.
And with Dr. King's assassination, they picked the one place where they could murder Dr. King and nobody would care. That's Memphis.
Well, so needless to say.
And he went there to help them.
And he lost his stuff like I lost mine. Oh, Lord, I won't even get into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly these are some of the things, again, and as we are talking about the assassination of Dr. King, you know, as we proceed,
we will be examining. They ran Ida B. Wells out of Memphis.
Yes, that's
right.
They wouldn't
back her. This sister stood up, and the black folks were ready to let the greatest black woman leader we have be lynched because she's standing up. That's how those people down there are. I'm just telling you.
Okay, well, that's good for me to know because I was going to try to get some people together in Minneapolis to try to do some support of some type. So I don't know the landscape, so I have to step back off of that because what that woman really needs.
Don't go to people. Remember, the civil rights workers had to go down there to die for the folks. The folk would run from them. Please don't come and register me to vote. We need to find people who have liberated mindsets and work with them. That sister, the mother, is ready to fight. She's from Mississippi. Let's work with her family, but don't expect, because I have pictures of people protesting. I saw a whole bunch of white people protesting. What were all the white women out there protesting? Where's the black women?
Mm-hmm.
My God. And it was a black sister who called her and told her they're going to get this, she needs to shut up because she's going to get the clinics closed because she's complaining about this.
Oh, my God. That's sick. That is truly sick.
Well, you haven't lived in Tennessee. Lord, I tell you, if he never takes me back, I can jump happily into my grave. Thank you, Jesus, for getting me out of Tennessee.
Oh, but what she needs now is a fundraiser.
Yes, she does. You could do that up there.
She needs a fundraiser.
And we can call it Minneapolis a cut above. Just raise money.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. Well, the other thing I want to add to this dialogue, family, is, again, you know, we have to really stop being so crisis-oriented. And that doesn't mean that if things come up, we should not address it. But again, particularly to my sisters, we have got to now do what we need to do. And what that means is we know that these things are going to happen, be it, of course, we weren't expecting specifically a penis being cut off by a baby, with a baby, but I'm saying we know this system well enough to know that on a day-to-day basis, stuff is going to be happening to our people. But what are we prepared to do as opposed to just react every time? Every time something happens, here we go, run here, run here, run here. Where is the ability and the reality for us as women to say, okay, we have an emergency fund or we have this in place, and when something happens, we can connect and get some stuff done. That's what the Million Woman Movement is about, to have a centralized entity that can now connect in any city and any state when it's time to get things done. So this is, I'm saying again, starting next month, we'll be kicking off our membership drive, support membership drive campaign. Okay? One in a million. This is for our human rights project, which will be connected to our African Women's Emergency Fund. I had, in 2 weeks, I had at least three women who needed immediate help. One was being evicted. One was being hit with a warrant for an arrest. Another something. So I'm saying, don't we notice this stuff is happening? But I'm saying, you know, we can't depend on these corporate-funded groups to really deal with the things that are happening to us in the day. They have holiday parties, they have conferences, they have other kinds of things. But in terms of the day-to-day reality of our women, girls, communities, and families, that ain't happening. We know that now. We're almost in 2014. So, again, sisters, can we get this thing done? And if not, y'all need to stop fronting, really.
And can I mention something, Sister Empress? I was talking to Mother Alveda King, the niece of Martin Luther King, the one that comes on Fox, and she says that they cut off penises all the time. This is commonplace. Commonplace for them to sterilize and cut off penises on young black babies. This just happened to come out. And people need to understand that one of the doctors involved was Chinese. And I can't prove it, but the Chinese have one of the biggest industries there is penis enlargement. It's called phalloplasty. And that's how a lot of doctors make their money. And what you can do is take the flesh out of a penis and put it in another. So you can actually transplant a penis, y'all. Now, you know they want to take that from you, brothers. Some folks have perfected the science to take it. Now, imagine what somebody would do for a black penis. And there are other things. People make soups and potions out of penises.
And people
pay money for it. That's the reason I think they won't give the organ back. Maybe the lady ate it. I don't know, you know, put it on sushi. We don't know. Those people are weird. And we shouldn't have people that we don't know touching our children, being around us. I'd even say to you, sisters, circumcision is a 20-minute operation. She had the baby for 3 hours. If I had been the mother, I would have kicked the door in.
But let me also say this about that, too. And, again, this is going back to our sisters. Again, this is why we're now doing the work that we're doing, because as women, as mothers, as daughters, as sisters, we should be educating these young sisters, these young mothers, the daughters, even the older mothers, because there's a lot of stuff. I mean, no matter how old you get, there's always things you can learn. But I'm saying, what group is taking on the responsibility to really provide certain types of information on an ongoing basis to these young girls? They don't know. They don't know what to do. Trust me, I've been out here with these kind of issues. Young sisters don't know certain things. We're expecting them to get it from osmosis or something,
or
from TV, or whatever. But the point being, as a woman, how many of our young girls or mothers or sisters, period, are we educating, providing information for and to regarding day-to-day realities? Are we telling our sisters, okay, before you sign something, make sure you understand what it says? Do you know how, can you imagine how many young girls in particular from 18 to 25 years old is signing stuff and don't have a clue what really goes with it? Who is helping them to learn? You see, so while Brother Randy and Sister Abby talk about the situation, particularly about this mother, Sister Maggie, who, you know, waited, I'm saying, yeah, and unless we have people, you would think that this is what a mother would do or whatever. I'm telling you, if you are in tune to this system the way they have most of us in tune to, you believe what these people tell you. And if those people, which they did, from what I'm told, told her, okay, go, you know, we've done this, but you go home, you shouldn't take the thing off, the diaper off for a couple of days or whatever. Okay, well, that didn't rest well with her. But at the same time, what other kinds of information is she really dealing with in terms of what to do? You see, we want to white people to do everything, everything. The littlest thing we don't have a clue about addressing. And I'm saying specifically as a people, but particularly as mothers, as young mothers in particular. And I'm saying, where's the training? Where's the insight? You see?
Mm-hmm.
So sisters, once again, I'm saying we have to take on some responsibility in some of this, really, because I guarantee you, other groups of women, other so-called ethnic or nationalities, they're doing that. They're doing some of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really up to us, and some of it is on us. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I think we do have to take some responsibility.
That's right. Folk need to stop twerking and start, you know.
Absolutely. Okay.
And it's shocking what you just shared with me, Dr. Short, about what people do with penises and that sort of thing. And if, in fact, she said that penises get cut off all the time and they're castrating children, well, I guess it's time that it does come to the forefront, and it definitely is a human rights issue, just as people have gone around and talked about the circumcision of women in Africa. Now I guess we have to talk about the castration of African-American boys during circumcision. If that happens all the time, I mean, I'd like to see some stats on that.
Well, sister, it wasn't a circumcision. I have a picture of the boys. They look like a tree stump cut close to the bone. That person meant to cut that piece of bone.
Wow.
I've seen it. I can't share the picture. It was deliberate.
No. Genital mutilation.
There are people. Clarence Thomas had a bad circumcision. Someone messed up his penis when they were trying to trim it, or maybe they were trying to just cut it off too. But whatever they did impacted the top of his penis. It didn't cut at the base.
Okay, well, what we're going to do is, and thank you, Sister Head, and again, on Saturday, we will have Sister Maggie on, and, of course, Attorney Sweet will be coming back. So any other questions that you have, please, you know, feel free to, you know, bring it forward on Saturday, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you. Okay, we're going to take one more call. I think we have, let's see. Oops, we're going to bring in, I think this might be Sister Dorothy, and then we might have Sister Gloria lined up. We're going to go and see if we can get Sister Dorothy's mic on next. Okay, Sister Dorothy, do we have you this time?
Yeah, you have me this time. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Very good. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, doing very fine.
All right.
And
And I was wanted to comment on the young lady too. Like I was saying, maybe she may not have known what to do, because a lot of times we look up to the doctors, and
right,
the doctor,
that's sure.
And they, you look up to the doctor, and if your doctor tell you that something is going, you know, you're going to do surgery, he may not, you may think, oh, well, maybe they ran into a little problem and you don't want to go knock on the door. I can't really explain it. How she, you know, only thing I can say is she looked up to the doctor, and that's probably why she didn't go knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion.
She did knock on the door.
Did
she? Knocked on the door. And the
and
people basically refused, they refused to open it.
Oh,
and she heard
okay.
a baby screaming for hours.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And also I would like to, Sister Empress, bring up,
mm-hmm.
too, about, you know, I try to keep my case in the forefront. Also,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to, did you see, it was on the news where they had a white foster mom out of Texas had three foster children. And out of those three foster children, she made $100,000 for 1 year off of three children. Recently,
wow.
then she had another baby. She had a little two-year-old baby, and the mother had marijuana in the car. She wasn't abusing the child, and they said it was just a small quantity of marijuana. They mm-hmm. she really shouldn't have even been took for that. Do you not know that foster mom took that baby and turned her bottom size up and deliberately dropped it on the head and killed it? And so this is what I'm saying. They give our children to in and everybody. And also, let me bring out the foster, I wanted to know some information about my granddaughter. I wanted to know, have they been adopted yet? I contact my lawyer. My lawyer contact their lawyer. Their lawyer
mm-hmm.
basically told my lawyer, don't call him anymore, that I got to call the foster family. The foster family tells me in the letter that he sent me, really, the only way, and they really not going to never let me see my grandchildren, but they saying, I got to quit getting on the radio and talking about my grandchildren, and I got to quit saying anything about the case or anything. Really, they trying to blackmail me, and I am praying that I can get a federal lawyer before March come in. If I don't get a federal lawyer before March, my case is going to fall by the wayside. I want to make a difference. And like you said, you can't find many people who want to help. I thank the Lord for you letting me have my voice on your radio show. I thank Dr. Sharp for letting me even call him. I know
mm-hmm.
sometimes he may get tired of me. I call him sometimes 2 o'clock in the morning, because nobody knows that the heartache and the torment when I lay up at nighttime and think about my granddaughters, and I'm wondering about what's going on with them. Well, my granddaughter hair wasn't even combed for one solid year. I have the pictures to prove that it wasn't even combed, how it was even matted down to her head. And I appreciate y'all letting me have my voice. Appreciate Miss Hattie. There's so many times I have called Miss Hattie when I could, just to even have a little talk or get a peace of mind in order to get through. And so I really
mm-hmm.
appreciate this radio show. But I'm really praying that somebody will hear me and help me get a federal lawyer. And
mm-hmm.
my hat is off to Dr. Schultz. Because Dr. Schultz are really wearing many hats, because he
mm-hmm.
is so stressed out, really, listening at everybody,
absolutely.
Trying to help everybody, and he going through himself, but he never tells us no. And I appreciate
absolutely.
Him for that. And
absolutely.
I just want him to know I appreciate him for that. Thank you, Dr. Cho, and thank you, Ms. Hattie, and thank you, Sister Empress. But I want to, I'm going to call their name, Liz and Steve Grosser. I will not keep silent when it comes to my grandchildren.
No,
I will never
right.
keep silent. Liz and Steve Grosser. I will never keep silent.
And what
you.
We'll do, Sister Dorothy, is make sure that the attorney, Attorney Sweet, will make sure that he has your information. And if he can't suggest handle the case himself, perhaps he can suggest someone else that we can talk with, because he is in Mississippi, or he's licensed in Mississippi. Okay, and that's
mm-hmm.
that's what we have to have. We have to have someone. You know, that is licensed in the state of Mississippi. So I'll make certain that we ask him that when we talk with him on Saturday, because he, you know, hopefully he will know of someone that we can connect with to try to get some things moving for you, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm bringing Dr. Randy Schutt back in. I had to mute him out because he was doing something, and I kept that noise. So we're going to bring him back in now. I'm trying to open up his mic now because I'm sure he has a comment for you as well. But for some reason, we're having a little problem opening up his mic, so we're going to continue to do that. In the meantime, let's see. We have one more caller, and caller, you are at 9302. Give me a few minutes because for some reason my boards are starting to act a little strange here. I'm still trying to bring in Dr. Randy Schutt, bring him back in. But for some reason, I'm having some difficulty. Let's see what's going on. Let's see if I can resolve this problem. Interesting. Okay, I'm going to try to open up 9302. I think that might be Sister Gloria, but again, family, bear with me because for some reason my voice are, like, stalling. Okay, I still have Sister Dorothy with us, so Dr. Randy, you stay right there. Sister Gloria, you stay right there. We're trying to open up your mics. For some reason, they are frozen. I'm trying to get them open for you. In the meantime, Sister Dorothy, please tell us where your Facebook site is.
It's
go ahead.
It's Dorothy Dunning.
Mm-hmm.
Dunning, D-U-N-N-I-N-G, Facebook. And I have many articles on my Facebook page. And I have my email information on there. You can reach me at goodgrandmama48@yahoo.com. Else you can reach me at 228-218-6100. Because truly, I don't only be an advocate for me. I want to be
mm-hmm.
an advocate for other people, because really this is not only happening to me. This is happening around different states and all over the world. They are taking our children, and they are taking our children and placing them in middle class, upper class people home, and our children are becoming the new money-making business. So they can stay home and raise their children off the backs of our children. And this is what they're doing. And I was speaking to a lady last night from Minnesota, and she was telling me about another case. Well, this young sister, they took her children for really because the little girl, her daughter, made a statement. And they go in and scoop your children up for really hardly no reason at all, take your children and place them in these mostly, 99% of the time, Caucasian homes,
mm-hmm.
and they paying
mm-hmm.
them way more money. And I also learned this, and this is a true statement, that when you have a biracial child, they pay more money. Because in my paperwork, the foster mom and the social worker said that my granddaughters was biracial. My granddaughters are not biracial. They are light-skinned Afro-American children. But the reason they were saying biracial, because the social worker in Minnesota let me know you get paid more money for them.
Wow.
And people, this is the truth. And people have to get and dig in this and find out, are we going to continue to let our children be taken? Are we going to continue to sit back and keep silent? And people of color need to become foster parents. They need to be, you see women with 5 and 6, 7, 8 children. Let's don't talk about them. Let's just try to do what we can to assist them and mentor them and see what we can do to help them and teach them how to take care of themselves. Let's don't smash them.
Let's
smash them and put them down.
That's right. This is
what's going on. And see, and I look in my community, I see I was telling Miss Hattie, the white bus come in my neighborhood every Sunday and get our children and they have a school bus and have it loaded down with our children, taking them to their church, and they put their thoughts in our children. And we sit back in our community and want to get excuse me, I don't mean no harm, to no disrespect to the preachers, but a lot of them want to sit back and get big cars, big fine homes, and don't even try to assist the people in the church who really need it. I know, because it came in my case. And I'm telling you, we got to wake up and quit and let folks come in our neighborhood and take our children. And also, we can put a system in place. I learned this. You can get, if you got a child or a daughter, they don't even have to be on drugs, or a son or whatever. Y'all can make a piece of paper out and get it notarized. And if they ever have a problem, that means you can take that piece of paper, and that means you automatically step in and get that child. You take it and put it in a vault, a secret place or whatever. And as long
That's
as you
right.
got that paper, when your child gets it acting up, you can take that piece of paper and go produce it and get your grandchildren. I did not know that.
All right, my sister. Well, we finally got our boards unlocked here, so you hang right there. We're going to take a quick comment from 9302. I think that's Sister Glory. Then we're going to go back to Dr. Randy Short. Sister Glory, your mic is now open. 9302, go.
Greetings, everyone.
Greetings to you.
You know, we're at a very, I can't think of the words to say the time that we're in right now. But this has been a process. I have a report from a web page, and it discusses how the global elite will take over this society. And it's called social engineering. And, I mean, this is so over the top that it's like science fiction. But we have proof as to what's going on. Now, my personal belief, this is just from the research I've done and things I've come across through other people on these blog radios, because I go look up everything. And to me, Trayvon Martin, he was a sacrifice because everything was so calm and in order and in position. And then we have a march. We made money from Skittles. We made money from the iced tea company. We made money from the hoodie company. So what? Where does the money go? Why don't we have a hospital?
No doubt, my sister. Well, I just want to remind everyone, Sister Gloria, hopefully you will be providing some of that report for our Tuesday call. Family, we have a weekly call on Tuesday. We will probably be changing that day for 2014, as Sister Amy has requested. But for right now, the next call will be for next Tuesday. We've been doing it every week, so hopefully you will be providing for the next call, Sister, you know, some information about the report that you're talking about. And that way people can also, you know, ask questions and provide whatever information they may have. So, you know, could you just let them know the time? And I don't know if you have the call-in number available, but if you do, you can give them that also.
Okay, well, excuse me, I'm sort of getting hoarse in the middle of this conversation. And,
no problem.
And also looking for a place to plug my...
Well, let me do this because we're going to be running out of time shortly. The call is on Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And normally I have the information in front of me. I do not right now. But what you can do is email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. And those who are interested, we surely will provide you with the call-in information. Okay? All right, Sister Gloria, thank you so much, and I'll look to talk with you on Tuesday.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, thank you. Okay, we are going to go now to Dr. Randy Short, and we are running out of time. Only have about 7 minutes or so left, so let us get to that right away. Brother Randy, here we are again not getting our updated report from you. So let's just kind of go through that briefly, and it looks like we're going to have to do this again. But give us just a little insight into some of the more recent stuff that you were able to uncover about some of the behavior or acts or writings or whatever of some of these folks
I've
called black leaders.
I've got two. And I'll just read a confidential record from the Clinical Research Bureau of the Harlem Clinic, run by Margaret Singer, written by Emma D. Jenkins, a social worker. On February 3rd, 1933, she talked with Dr. Powell Sr. This is Adam Clayton Powell Sr. Quote, he is in sympathy with the work and very willing to cooperate. Asked for suggestions as to how his church might do more to make the clinic in Harlem go where is much needed. He has received adverse criticism because of his allowing Mrs. Singer to speak in his church. One very prominent minister of a denomination other than Baptist cries that he'd allow that woman, awful woman, in his church. Dr. Powell suggested that his son, Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, Jr., would be the logical person with whom to confer regarding the plans, as he was in charge of their social work and community activities, and that we would have his permission to carry through any plans which might evolve. Talk with Dr. Adam Powell, Jr. He, too, is most cooperative, is interested in knowing about talks being given at the Urban League. Thought we might plan similar talks to groups about 150 unemployed men who are there on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. and 75 unemployed women on Thursdays at the same time. Other meetings might be planned as follows. Satellite alumni, 30 to 40, married people, Mrs. Brooks, Men's Community Brotherhood, 50 men. And let me come down. Mr. Roy Otley, in direct charge of the unemployed group, stated he was glad to work out plans for our talks and the above-mentioned groups. So we've got two more black necks, Adam Clayton Powell Sr. and the so-called revolutionary Roy Otley.
Wow.
Oh, I mean, I got to go back tomorrow. Hold on, I got one more by Roy, I mean, in case you want to like this. This is written from the birth control people. Let me see. Which one do I want to do? Hold on one second. I got so many of these. I was on there for hours, Mav. It just took so much time. Let me go down to 171. I'm going to skip a couple pages. There's so much stuff, y'all. It's not like I don't have it together. You can't even share it all. I'm going to be on page 171 in 1 second. Here we go. 171. Okay. Listen to this. Dear Miss Emmy Jenkins, Social Worker, Birth Control Clinical Research Bureau, my dear Mrs. Jenkins, thanks for your kind letter of February 9th. God, that's my birthday. I was happy to do what I could for your association by presenting in editorial form some of the important facts concerning it. Very truly yours, William M. Kelly, Editor-in-Chief, The Amsterdam News.
Amsterdam News?
All of them,
as in
yes,
New York Amsterdam News?
The New York Amsterdam News supporting Margaret Sanger. That's his letter to these people. I mean, I got the letterhead.
Okay.
I mean, wow. Who isn't a traitor? Now, let's digress for a second, because Margaret Sanger, we could do that for hours. I just want to do some fast and dirty stuff. Remember this. I was also looking because there's a link between the Tuskegee experiment and the Negro Project. They're both aimed at wiping us out. Let's quickly remember that the Tusk, which was originally created by a Mr. Talafario Clark, he wanted to, after 9 months, give people treatment. This white man, when he realized that they were not going to treat the black men, he quit. The white man quit. This is in 1932. The white man quit. What happened? Black people got greedy. Black necks got greedy. A little racist man by the name of Raymond Vondelaar, I think he's Jewish, he was the on-site director for the syphilis study, okay? Do you know that he was funded by the Rosenwald Foundation, which was also funding that clinic that the Amsterdam News supported and Adam Clayton Powell Sr. and Jr. supported? All right? Same years, okay? Now, let me just jump to my documents I got from the CDC. I'm going to give you some quick quotes. This is from Tuskegee, and this is, let me see. I'm going to come down. Come on. Come on, work with me, technology. And I want to run this by you and let you know that a lot of the correspondence that I have, these people are begging for money, but I need to remind everybody, Dr. Eugene H. Dibble, Jr. is Vernon Jordan's father-in-law. Ann Dibble, who's married to Jordan, is the daughter of the doctor who helped the Tuskegee Project. I'll repeat his name, Dr. Eugene H. Dibble, Jr., Secretary Treasurer of the Tuskegee Institute as well. No. Let me skip down. I'm going to give you this thing right here. My mind was blown. My mind was blown when I looked at these things and I saw that, hold on, wait a sec. Hold on, 1 second. No. I need to skip down because there's so many of these letters. What you need to know is that these people were happy to do this stuff, happy to do this. Listen to this. This is from Russa Moten, the founder of the United Negro College Fund, writing Dr. Cummings, the Surgeon General of the U.S. Public Health Service, the same one that let all the black women die from pellagra. He wrote him regarding Tuskegee, and he said, I want to assure you and Dr. Clark that Tuskegee will gladly cooperate as suggested in Dr. Clark's recommendations. We appreciate this additional opportunity to serve and what we think is a very worthwhile cause. Worthwhile cause, y'all. Worthwhile cause. That's what he said. I mean, I'm looking right at it. I'm saying, Jesus, save me. Help me, Lord. Worthwhile cause. Now, I need to find this one quote in here. Oh, here it is. Now, this is my favorite one. The guy who decided to kill black people, Dr. Vandeleer, he's writing he's writing Dibble, Vernon Jordan's father-in-law. And check this out, y'all. It occurs to me that it might be quite helpful if you were given the franking privilege and connected with business which we shall transact. And for this reason, I wish to offer you the appointment as special consultant in the public health service at the nominal salary of $1 per annum. Written by Dr. Vandeleer for the Division of Venereal Services, which means that this man was willing to work for $1 a year, destroying his own people. That's why I hate black eggs, and pray for me. At least you'd have to give me $1 million, and you'd have to give me millions to do something. Like, I couldn't even do it for millions. I couldn't live with myself. He could do it for $1, y'all. That's why we need a regime change against black necks. I want to read something else. Russell Moten, Dibble, listen to this. We were doing here in the past when the Curidon clinics, okay, they were looking at how syphilis impacts the cardiovascular system. I wonder what they did with all that information, because we always have cardiovascular system problems as people. What do they know? And it's very, and by the way, this is written by Dr. Dibble. And let me skip on down to one more thing. I got like a minute or two. I'm going to just run something by you. I have some stuff to shock you. Now, here we go. Here we go. This is the result of the serological survey on rural Negroes in the untreated syphilis study in Macon County, Alabama. Now, most people have been led to believe that they were only looking at men. This is not true. According to this table, they were looking at 544 men, and then they were looking at 363 women, for a total of 907 persons that they were poking around with. Now, altogether, they experimented on 4,000 people, and then they narrowed it down to that 900, and then they did something with men. Maybe they didn't even bother because the study, they didn't care too much about women. They didn't really do much once they knew the women were infected. At least we know that men were not given treatment for the syphilis. But what about this 363 women? Don't they count? Let me come down. I got to give you some more stuff because it's so... Well, I'm going to come down.
Well, we only have like 1 minute left. So we're
I'm
going
to give you one more
really...
minute.
Okay.
Give me this minute. Okay. Everybody knows that what folks used for syphilis back then was the sulfur drugs. But if you look at Table 2, they say the number of injections of an arsenical means that they were using arsenic to treat, and they were giving arsenic to men and to women. Now, everybody knows that arsenic is a toxic heavy metal, and they're calling that an experiment. No, this is just about slaughtering black folks. And by the way, I didn't read the note, but Dr. Dibble says all the nurses and doctors at that Andrew Memorial Hospital in Tuskegee knew that these black folks were being experimented on. Black necks know what's happening to us. They don't care because they don't think it's going to happen to them.
Well, family, you heard it right here. New Day Resurrection Liberation. We will be black this Saturday, and we're going to continue this dialogue. That was just to kind of get you all thinking a little more about what's really going on and what we need to do to address it. We want to thank our brother for bringing this information to us. I mean, this is pretty groundbreaking. I mean, we knew this stuff was going on, but now to be able to really have reference points and documentation, we're linking some of this. So we're going to continue this dialogue on Saturday along with some other dialogue. I'm going to tell you about this new group in California that's doing the Million Woman March for Endometriosis, and we just shut them down. But we'll tell you more about that on Saturday as well. Again, we want to thank Sister Samaya Fire for giving us
her update on Sister Marissa Alexander, and of course all of you who called in tonight and gave your comments, and certainly Dr. Ramsey Short. We will be back on Saturday, and we want to remind you we've got some really powerful things going to happen here at New Day, and we'll be telling you more about that very soon as well. But for now, we've got to go. Again, we thank all of you for tuning in, and we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, no real Hotep, until there's truly Ma'at, meaning justice. Till next time, Tuta Nana Pamoja to the Shenda. Together we shall win. Thank you, Brother Randy. Talk to you on Saturday.
All right.
Thank you
bye.
Also, Sister Dorothy and Sister Gloria and Sister Hattie and all of you. We thank you for tuning in. Sister Amy, peace to you all.
Hello.